originally Dan O'Bannon and Ronald Shusett wrote a short story that they called Star Beast, which it's a very 70s kind of name, right? They also, in some versions, they also called it Memory. And O'Bannon was asked, can you tell us a little bit about the story of Alien? And he says, a more revealing title would be The Haunted Spaceship. And he said, because it's about a crew of astronauts who encounters a supernatural menace. And I must say, that really has haunted me.
Today we are joined by a very special guest. He is the returning champ, Ken Amy. He was last on the show titled Evolution, Aliens, Lucifer, and Transhumanism, the Illuminati Doctrine. And we talked about science as the Illuminati religion and how they want us to believe in aliens as a further evolved species. And today, we're going to go through these topics with a new book he has called A Worldview Review of the Alien and Predator Mythos Franchises. And this book goes through all 13 films between the Alien and Predator franchises. And today we're going to break down some of the topics from the book. Ridley Scott, H.P. Lovecraft, H.R. Giger, alien penises. You want the alien penises, I know you do. Sigourney Weaver wants the sexy time with the aliens. Rastafarianism, what? How does that play into this? You'll find out. And of course, the hidden hand behind both films. So stay tuned, and you can check him out on truefreethinker.com. I will put links in the show notes. Let's do it. All right, we got sure. the hardest working man in the whole conspiracy realm on truefreethinker.com, returning champ, Ken Amy. How you doing today, Ken?
Well, I don't know. I think I'm second to you, but anyhow, I'm great.
Right on. Yeah, you were on this show. The last time we talked, we covered Evolution, Aliens, Lucifer, and Transhumanism, the Illuminati Doctrine. And on that show, we talked about science as the Illuminati religion and about how they, of course, they being in quotes, how they want us to believe in aliens as a further evolved species. And that leads us to today's conversation, where we're going to talk about some new works of yours. You've written many, many books. That's why I say you're probably the hardest working man I know. And yeah, how many books have you written by now?
I should know my own canon, but I haven't counted in a while. I'm going to guess maybe 30.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. You got a lot of titles out there. It's a lot of content. And you know, I appreciate your passion for it. It's very good. I know what it's like, though, because I don't know how many books I've written. It's like six or seven. I'm not really sure. But now we, of course, are going to talk about your latest book, Aliens and the Predators Mythos. But before we get into the alien rabbit hole, what do you make of Jeffrey Epstein?
Oh, boy.
It's a fascinating.
I have to say it, but it didn't come as much of a surprise. Yes, right. There's so many directions you can go in with that guy, including that it's been very well known what he's been doing for decades, and yet he's been out there doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I don't know why.
So yeah, that this whole Epstein thing. It's a fascinating time to be in the conspiracy realm, because so many times we see the conspiracy theories being, mocked by mainstream media, but then the crazy stuff happens. And now this guy is supposedly dead. Supposedly the cameras didn't catch anything. The corrections officers were, the one guy wasn't really a CO. I mean, it's like they're fueling conspiracy theories on this topic. So I'm trying to take notes on the whole Epstein saga, because there's just so much, and every single day there's something new. Like now we're seeing that he had this weird painting of Bill Clinton dressed up in Monica Lewinsky's blue dress inside of his home. I don't know. It's just a lot of wacky stuff. And the reason why I brought it up was because previously we talked and I didn't get a chance to talk to you about it, but I recall you had an article, and you've got thousands of articles on your website, but there was an article about John Podesta and Edgar Mitchell. And the crux of what I'm going towards here is that these connected people, and when I say connected, you could take that as conspiratorial as you like, you know, but these connected people, they seem to be interested in the alien agenda, which is what Clinton promised on her campaign, was that she was going to help with the disclosure element, and John Podesta was deep into that, and now we're seeing John Podesta talking to Tom DeLonge from Blink-182 and his whole thing, plus John Podesta was on Ancient Aliens even. So it all rolls into this whole thing that it's very clear that aliens play a role in our future. And I think your books, you've got more than one book on the alien subject. I just happened to pick up your Aliens and Predator Mythos, but you did just release a book. What was it called? 50 Shades of Grey Alien?
Yes, that's an earlier one. Yeah, 50 Shades of Grey Aliens. Right.
And you think that you think that there's an agenda to, I mean, because you've got a lot. I mean, obviously the topic of aliens and UFOs is a subject we could go into many directions, but do you think, like, politically there's a desire to push the idea and the concept that aliens exist into the mass consciousness?
Well, one thing about the general concept of aliens is that it is just that. It is a general concept, right? So in that way, it can be sort of force-fitted into many different ideologies and worldviews and theologies so that it kind of becomes a catch-all term and a theory of everything. So, I mean, you can believe in aliens and be religious or be an atheist or be on any political spectrum, any sociological spectrum. It doesn't matter. It can literally unite everybody.
Now, we're gonna cover your book, and the title is A Worldview Review of the Alien and Predator Mythos Franchises. And I think it's an appropriate time to talk about that because we're coming up on the 40th anniversary limited re-release of the original film Alien in theaters. And your book, I picked it up already. I'm roughly a quarter of the way through it, but I thumbed through it to kind of see the gist of what some of your topics were. And I wanted to kind of maybe go through and pull out some of the concepts for the people listening of what this book goes into. Besides, you know, it's not a book designed to go through the films, right? I mean, this isn't like a breakdown of the scenes within the movies, is it?
Right, you're right. So yes, exactly. So every chapter covers a different movie, and I always joke that the research for this book was watching 13 movies, but in reality, it took a lot of work, because my focus isn't the cinematography and the acting, and who cares, that just wasn't what I was interested in. I was interested in the worldview, philosophy and theology and occultism and transhumanism and evolution and all that in these movies, because actually of course those things are written into the movies by people who hold real life worldviews. So the issue was I might have to read an average of five different articles and interviews to pull out one single quotation that I could use, right? Because I had to work really, really hard just to try to figure out who the scriptwriter, the directors, the actors, who was actually talking about anything sort of philosophical in these movies. So that was really hard work, is trying to pull that stuff out of articles and interviews that would just drone on about stuff that didn't interest me at all. And then another part of it is when I would get myself into these entire websites that are literally devoted to these movies, is the amount of detail that the fans go into is insane. I mean, they could tell you the make and model of a boot based on a footprint left on the dirt at 1 hour, 12 minutes, 30 seconds into Aliens Part 3. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was really interesting to read the kind of stuff that the hardcore fans had to say. And I really relied on them a lot to get a lot of sort of behind the scenes insights, or what is this particular creature called, you know, stuff that I would never otherwise know. So it really did take a lot of work, but that was what I was interested in, is the world views that are being brought from real life people and placed into these movies that are then portrayed as sci-fi.
Indeed. I think that, and I've said it many times, science fiction always precedes science fact, that this is a topic that someone needed to cover, and I admire your persistence, because you're right. This isn't a series of films that the fans take lightly. It's a lot of real intense background stories, and sometimes they'll go into the the comic book version of these films and pull out characters and ideas, and it's kind of amazing that with the level of detail these fanboys have for these movies, that there's not more people talking about the occult connections to be had here. Now, a guy who is mentioned towards the beginning of the book here, the director Ridley Scott, he is an interesting character to say the least. I know he's like knighted, and he doesn't seem to, because I recall researching similar topics, and it seemed like it was a little more difficult to pin down what his religious outlook was on that. What were we able to find out about Ridley Scott?
Well, at least openly, he calls himself an atheist.
And that plays into the movies, right? Because I recall in your book, you talk about the atheist concept and the worldviews and something about the meaningless existence here, and I guess that perhaps plays into the terror of this sort of film.
Right, it's like a existential nihilism, right? So what you see playing out in the movies, and you're right, by the way, I mean, first Alien movie was 1979, so, and we're in 2019, so that's quite a spread. Ridley Scott directed the first movie, and then he's taken them back up in the last two, Prometheus and Covenant. And basically, he's laying out that life on Earth is designed, intelligently designed, in fact, but only by a race of already existing aliens. And so we don't know where they came from. So it kind of sets up the typical infinite regress, right? We humans were created by aliens, but the aliens were created by somebody else, and well, who created them and them and them and them and them, right? So it's the they're actually called engineers in the movie, the ones that created us. And so you can see how what he does in the beginning of Prometheus is to have a scene that actually comes right out of ancient mythology, which is of a god dying and thereby bringing about human life. But in a more modern sense, it's sort of like combining intelligent design and Darwinism, where, yes, you have an engineer who comes to Earth and literally sacrifices himself, and that gives rise to the first life on Earth that then evolves. You see that? It's like a combination of things. And so that's what the movies are for him, is how do we account for life without God? And so for now, we're just stuck with this infinite regress of, well, we don't know who created our creators, but that's very specific to the point of the movie, is figuring that out. And he's also very much more interested in moving away from the xenomorph, the actual alien entity. He's more interested in focusing on the AI, you know, the androids.
Yeah, that's true, huh? Yeah, my personal opinion, the best films in this whole anthology here is the original Alien, Covenant, and Prometheus, which, like you said, those were all Ridley Scott's, because to me, the other ones are more about the action and special effects. But there's a sort of, I don't know if religious is the right term, but more of a religious element in these other movies.
Well, there are. Well, but you can't forget about Alien and Resurrection. I mean, the title tells it to you right there. That is, Alien 3 and Resurrection are extremely theological, where you have Ripley literally dying and being resurrected, right? You have her arriving on a planet and being found unconscious on the shores of the ocean, which to me is very Dante's Inferno-like, because Dante crosses the river Styx unconscious and then comes to, right? So that kind of sets up that where she ends up, and not surprising, it's a place called Furia, and it's a prison that functions as a refinery. So you have your symbolism of fire, right, and destruction. And you also have the sort of hidden concept that the directors talk about, which is that Ridley, you know what, I'm confusing the names Ridley as in Ridley Scott with Ripley as the lead character.
Mm-hmm.
Ripley and Ridley, and honestly I think he probably did that on purpose, right? It's
yeah,
just too much of a coincidence. It's Ridley and Ripley. It's almost like she's his female alter ego. But anyhow, that's just a side note. But they do talk about her being cursed, because every movie she has to fight this alien menace, and then she survives, and then the same movie it's the same thing again, and then the same thing again, and the same thing again.
Interesting.
So that's the term they use for his life. They refer to her as being cursed,
and that draws ideas of what the mark of Cain, perhaps.
I don't know how they would picture it, but it's almost like she's in an existence where she's just stuck in a cycle and there's no escape. Okay, you have to remember that in ancient pagan concepts, the time wasn't linear. There was no beginning, middle, and end. It was just loops upon loops upon loops of time. That's one of the unique features of biblical theology, is that there's actually a beginning, and then there's an actual middle, and then there's an actual end. Time is linear, where that really distinguished it from these concepts of, you know, reincarnation, transmigration, creation, destruction, forever.
That's a good point. Now, the and I haven't seen Alien 3 or Resurrection in, oh man, I bet it's been 15 years, you know, before I was looking for these types of messages.
Right.
So definitely worth a rewatch there. And you mentioned something curious in the book. You mention how Alien evoked the writings of H.P. Lovecraft, and H.P. Lovecraft comes up often in my research. For instance, in Peter Lavenda's book, The Dark Lord, he mentions the sort of magical elements of H.P. Lovecraft, and of course, the Call of Cthulhu, and Cthulhu is about the old ones, and these old ones are somehow, you know, I forgot the term. He says something about lying, sleeping, waiting to be called upon. And that's kind of what we see in Prometheus, right? They head out to the planet, or even Alien, you know, they head out to the planet and boom, here comes the aliens.
Well, yeah, you hit the nail on the head, because what Prometheus is doing is pointing back to Alien, because there is that scene in Alien where they arrive at at a planet where they encounter what's called the jockey, the space jockey. And it's kind of a passing thing. They just kind of walk through it and they see this huge biomechanical thing. And then they kind of, the movie goes on from there. And Ridley Scott says that it was kind of always in the back of his head about why people weren't really going after that aspect of the movie, which that was in 1999, and he finally was able to bring it back up in 2012, which is exactly that. So you have these concepts of ancient aliens, and you have, I use the term biomechanoid or biomechanic because now we're also getting into H.R. Giger territory. And by the way, that's where I quoted you in my book, is for some of the background on Giger. So yeah, you have Lovecraft, who, I mean, he's so incredibly influential. It's to the point where it's so influential that people won't even really cite him anymore, because what he wrote was is just so entrenched in sci-fi and fantasy literature that it kind of comes out of in one way or another everything that people are doing. For example, the Hellboy movies, that is straight up Lovecraft.
Yeah, and I've tried to read,
so you have Lovecraft being played off.
I tried to read those Lovecraft novels, and they were a little too difficult for me to get through, but certainly he is cited many times by many artists.
If you think of the at the Mountains of Madness, you have the basic premise for these concepts of ancient aliens. Okay, so you had an ancient of aliens that arrived on Earth, had a civilization, ended up being destroyed, were frozen over in the poles, and they can be awakened. I mean, that's meanwhile they bring forth human life or whatever. And so you see that in everything from popular sci-fi, like The Thing. You know, it's the movie begins with an alien spacecraft crash to Earth, and then thousands and thousands of years later they find it, and the alien comes back to life. And then you find it in Ancient Astronauts, concepts by Eric von Däniken, and then you find it in Ancient Aliens, that modern day TV show. It's all the same stuff. And you find it in these movies, right? You find it in Prometheus, and you find it in the crossover movies, Alien versus Predator. They talk about the same exact thing, which is aliens have been coming here all along. We worship them as gods, this, that, and the other.
And that's curious. I don't know how related this is, but the John Carpenter has a trilogy. I think they call it the Antichrist trilogy. It's a series of three films. The first one is his remake of The Thing in the 80s. And then it was, oh goodness, put me on the spot here. I forget the second movie, but the third movie was, the second movie was Prince of Darkness, about this this green sludge that was a sort of form of evil and the Antichrist waiting to find a host. And then the third film was called In the Mouth of Madness, which when I was reading through your book, you mentioned The Mountains of Madness, which is apparently an H.P. Lovecraft book. Like I said, I'm not a huge Lovecraft fan, but that is kind of curious. I don't know how much of a connection there is to be had there, but it is interesting that you put those all together. We talk about The Thing, and yeah, you're right. These movies and, you know, Ancient Aliens has done a lot of work to sort of push that idea out there from Eric von Däniken's ancient astronaut theory that the aliens have been here before and they're just waiting to be sort of resurrected, I guess. Now, H.R. Giger... Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, the Mouth of Madness. I mean, the entities that are influencing the author in that movie are definitely Lovecraftian, no question about it. And what's that movie about? It's about movies influencing real life events through fiction.
That's right.
That's exactly what it's about. Is the author, the protagonist is an author who's writing fiction, but then his fiction becomes reality and he promulgates it, right? He gets his his message out there by his books, and then ultimately by his books being made into movies. And basically the entire world falls apart because people are watching these movies and reading these books, and it's affecting them in real life, which I think you know very well is magic 101, magic with a K, right? It's the imposition of the human will towards change in the real world.
Yeah, and I think, going off the top of my head,
I
think that, talking about the Math of Madness, the author's name, the character's name is Cain Sutter. You obviously have a Cain there as a reference, right. But he
Sutter
also...
Cain there as a reference.
Sutter Cain. Yeah, but he also has, like, I remember he draws a bunch of inverted crosses all over himself, too, so there's clearly a religious element to be had in all those movies connected with the aliens.
Right, definitely. And I know you were about to jump into Giger, and so that's why I used the term biomechanoid or biomechanic, because that was his term for transhumanism. And Giger's artwork is all about the occult. I mean, and transhumanism and gender bending, and you just, that's what it's all about. And the alien movies would not be what they are without H.R. Giger's alien design, creature effects.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with
they
you there.
They kind of took those movies. Yeah.
Now, Giger, he was an interesting character because he was doing the same thing that you hear a lot of these creative artist types where they talk about, sort of like going into this dark shadow realm and finding some kind of influence. And I don't think they're lying. I think they're doing something to get in contact with this, you know, dark force or aliens or the Antichrist or whatever we want to call it. And it's curious that he had, you know, in your book, I was reading about the connections to Crowley, Aleister Crowley himself.
Yeah, I mean, you remember very well that William Ramsey sent you that photograph of H.R. Giger and out in his house, and who's on the wall behind him? A photograph of Crowley, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's got a piece of art called, I think it's called Crowley. Crowley, however you want to pronounce it.
Yeah, right. Yes.
But yeah, it's interesting how these people find the same sort of influences, H.P. Lovecraft and Aleister Crowley and Giger, who in a lot of his stuff pushes these, like you said, the occult symbolism. He's got the Baphomet, and I'm curious about that idea about the transhumanism, because I actually hadn't heard him talk much about the transhumanism, but you can clearly see the biomechanoid sort of imagery would support such a thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no question about it.
What do you think about
go ahead.
What do you think about the the phallus and how these aliens I know you go into it a little bit more in the book, but the penisry imagery of these aliens.
You know what? I think it's kind of funny that, sometimes, you know, we talk about phallic symbols, and because it is, there's such a thing as a phallic symbol. But then sometimes I'm kind of hesitant to talk too much about it, because then people start thinking about my frame of mind. If everywhere I look, I see a schmeckle, you know what I mean? But these, especially, we haven't really talked about Predator much, but on the alien side, yeah, it is all about sex. It's all about mommy and daddy issues, and it's all about abortion. I mean, it is all over these movies, period. This sex of every perverted sort, including sex with aliens, which Predator always also touched upon later on. And yeah, that the alien, the xenomorph, is phallic is very openly admitted to, including that the eggs also. The eggs are the female companion, let's say, to the male phallic symbol. Mm. In fact, it's sort of well known in these circles that when Giger first designed the egg, it only had one slit. And so it was pointed out to him that well, you know, that is very feminine genitalia-like, and so you should probably redesign that. So then he made it dual slit, right? So it's more like an X or a cross now. And he talked about how that looked to him like your typical Catholic communion wafer.
What? And you had an interesting quote from, was it Sigourney Weaver that brought up the idea that she wanted to have her character have sex with the alien? Is that what I read?
That's correct. She also wanted her character to die, which she did. She got that. I don't know if she ever did the other thing, but that's what she was hoping for.
That's interesting. Now, go ahead.
Yeah, while you don't actually have that happening, you do have this mixing and mashing of genetics, right? You have genetic manipulation to the point where she does end up becoming the mother of an alien-human hybrid, just not directly. And then she ends up aborting it.
Sigourney Weaver's character?
Yeah, her genetics end up being mixed with xenomorph genetics, and it produces this hybrid alien. And by the end of the movie, she literally aborts it, right? She makes a hole in the side of the spacecraft, so it gets sucked out.
Oh, right. Okay. Now, we talked mostly about the Alien franchise, but I do want to touch on the Predator franchise. I actually don't know.
So let me say one more thing about the Alien franchise. So, originally, Dan O'Bannon and Ronald Shusett wrote a short story that they called Star Beast, which is a very 70s kind of name, right? They also, in some versions, they also called it Memory. And O'Bannon was asked, can you tell us a little bit about the story of Alien? And he says, a more revealing title would be The Haunted Spaceship. And he said, because it's about a crew of astronauts who encounters a supernatural menace. And I must say, that really has haunted me. Because if you watch every single Alien movie, you can read into it that there's something supernatural about it, but that's definitely something that's not been emphasized. So I did find it fascinating that his original idea was that this has to do with a supernatural entity that's haunting. And then it was kind of turned into, no, guess what? This is just a biological alien. That's all it is.
Yeah, that is interesting, especially when you go down the idea that the aliens are really just demonic entities from some other dimension, and they're not, in fact, biological entities. So that is curious.
Yes, that haunts me. So go ahead, Predator.
Yeah, for sure. I had written some notes down, and you tied the Predator into Rastafarianism. Is that right?
Well, I don't know if I tied it, but it was just some of the originators of the Predator design talked about how they were influenced by Rastafarian dreadlocks to come up with these, sort of smooth plastic dread-looking things that come off of the Predator's heads.
Yeah, because I think the last time we talked, you had dropped a little bit of knowledge on me, because I don't know anything about Rastafarianism, right? You know, I like Bob Marley's music well enough, and that's about the extent of my knowledge. And I didn't realize that apparently Rastafarianism has some sort of anti-Christian angle to it that I was unaware of. So I found that curious that you were able to mention that in the book, with the Predator being relatable to the dreadlocks and the Rastafarian influence there.
Yeah, so I don't want to deviate too far on this, so I'll just give it to you really quick. Rastafarianism believes that Ethiopian Emperor Haile Selassie, who is called Ras Tafari, which means a lion's head. They claim that he was God on Earth. He was God incarnate. And so in that sense, they cannot accept Christianity. They can't accept Jesus as is, because then that would create a fundamental contradiction, right? So that's why in one of the Bob Marley songs called Talking Blues, he says, I feel like bombing a church because a preacher is lying. And then he says, we know that the living God is a living man. I mean, the mighty God is a living man. So what's interesting is what happened is some Rastafarians did end up meeting with Haile Selassie. And the thing is, Selassie himself was a Coptic Christian. So he tells them, no way, I'm not God in the flesh. Jesus is. So I'm not sure how much ganja you have to smoke when your God tells you don't worship me and you just do it anyway.
Oh, man, they'd be blowing through ganja down there, so I don't know. Now,
yeah, not being a brat, but those are facts.
I do want to – we got probably time for one more idea here. How does the Predator – if you were to try to, like, sum it up in just a few minutes, how does the Predator series, the franchise, play into this big, you know, occult / Illuminati, whatever we want to call this, about the new world order here, the new agenda?
Okay, so that's something I actually liked about both franchises, is that there's the hidden hand. In both of them, you have, on the alien side, you have the Weyland-Yutani Corporation. That's a massive corporation that's into space travel and genetic manipulation and all that. They're the hidden hand behind all of these space explorations and deriving technology and genetics and all that. On the Predator side, you have CIA operations, right? So you have sort of black ops going on. And that carries all the way from the very first Predator movie clear on through the last one, The Predator. And so there's that aspect of it. That there's always a hidden hand moving events. And you have this concept of that we're dealing with the elite, the absolute elite, who see us as nothing but pawns, right? That's why you can send people into space and you can sacrifice them all. And it doesn't matter to you as long as you get some technology out of it, or some alien genetics. Or as far as Predator, you have this CIA elite black ops that is aware that these predators come to Earth periodically, and they hunt human beings, and that's just fine with you because you're just after some of the weaponry and genetics. It's the same in both franchises. And another part that I actually love about the movies, especially Aliens, is that you always find out that the person who thinks that they are the elite actually finds out that there's someone who's more elite than thou, right? Typical example is in Prometheus, how Mr. Weyland himself goes into outer space and meets an engineer face to face. Okay, Weyland himself, the elitist, and the engineer alien just basically pimp slaps him into oblivion. It's like, you think you're the elitist of the elite? You're going to meet me, your creator, and demand that I heal you and give you eternal life? Watch this. Boom. And that's it. He's gone.
Yes, indeed. And like you're saying, the ends always justify the means, and the masses are merely, the sheeple, the cattle used for the ends of whatever their desires could be. Now,
exactly. And then again, what ends? Yes, but just to seal the deal, that's exactly correct. With the added, the people who are doing that to us always find out that they're actually not the top. There's always a hidden hand who's actually been manipulating them and is more elitist than they are.
Now, I want you to tell the listeners where do you want them to find these books? Because you've got several of them. Like you said, you probably have 30 books out there. Where can they find this Alien Predator Mythos book?
Yeah, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to mention that. Obviously, they're on Amazon. They're on Barnes and Nobles. You can get them online anywhere. But those places are horrible for authors because we barely get a tiny fragment of the price you're paying. So the best bet is go to truefreethinker.com, all one word, True Free Thinker. And then you can just contact me, tell me what you need. To you, it's always better to buy from authors, especially if you're dealing with independent authors like Isaac and myself.
Hear, hear. Yeah, you said it correctly, brother. All right. And then lastly, where can they hook up with you besides truefreethinker.com? You're on the social medias. Where's that at?
Yeah, well, what I did at True Free Thinker, if you go to my homepage, I have hyperlinks to all my various social networking sites. So if you like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or some of the smaller social networking sites, you can find all the links there. I just try easy for people to just give them one place to go, which is my home site.
Right on. And I'll post a link in the show notes for your website. Hey, thanks for coming back on, and thanks for going through the hassle of watching and writing about all of those Alien and Predators movies. I'm sure that was not a task taken lightly.
Always a pleasure.
Right on.
It was a lot of work, and I definitely appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll be back in touch. All right, what'd you think? That was Ken Amme from TrueFreeThinker.com. You can get his books on Amazon, or you can take the extra step and reach out to him directly on TrueFreeThinker.com and get his books. And you can hit him up on his social media feeds from the TrueFreeThinker.com website. And if you want to help this show out, go on iTunes and drop that review. Drop the reviews. I'm reading them. I'm going to keep bugging you until we hit 1,000 reviews. And I am, of course, still reading every single one of them. And I do appreciate them. And I do appreciate you and your listenership. So go drop that review on iTunes. And until next time, keep watching.